Hi, I'm Chanel, one of the journalists at Manx Radio. Welcome to the latest edition of Manx Radio Newscast. Can I start with your name and your title, please?
Maria Brideson. I'm an advocate, Brideson Halswell Advocates.
Right. Now, Maria, in Tynwald this week, we had the inward migration policy that was being looked at and talked about. As an immigration lawyer yourself, I'm sure you would have followed this conversation. You would have been following this conversation. What did you make of it?
Thanks, Chanel. The inward migration report was laid before Tynwald for discussion, and that was for Tynwald to decide at a high level policies that they wanted to apply to migration to the island. And that's both immigration, foreign nationals moving to the island, and also migration people from within the common travel area. So it covered both aspects. The report that they were considering had an appendices, which was a report prepared by Brideson Halswell, Immigration Gap Analysis, where we've been asked to look at the differences between the current Isle of Man immigration system and the UK system. So clearly it was a topic that it was very much interested in.
Right. And from that, do you want to go a little bit into that report, the findings of that report? What were the findings of that report?
They're vast. So the findings of the report had a very tight focus, but it was to look at the differences between the two systems. So to look at a particular route, the UK has skilled worker, the Isle of Man has worker migrant. So what are the differences in terms of salary levels, duration? So to look side by side as to where the Isle of Man may or may not align with the UK. But more broadly, it looked at not just the specific route, but that more broader policies, legislation, systems, process and framework within which immigration in the Isle of Man sits and how that differs to the UK. Because often how immigration actually works on the ground is not so much that a salary may be a couple of thousand pounds different, but it's issues as to what enforcement powers Isle of Man Immigration Office has when they come across issues, what the relevant legislation is, and issues such as data collection. In the UK, they have much broader access to data on a real-time basis. So who's travelled across the border, what jobs they're currently in, where they're living. They have access to a lot of different online UK government data sets which they can access and monitor. And the situation is different in the Isle of Man because, as I'm sure you'll know, we operate a much more separate system of government. So immigration perhaps doesn't always know where somebody is working or where they're living or whether they're on the island or not. So the report looked at the consequences of the differences more broadly, not just in terms of the narrow differences in immigration routes.
So here on the island, could we do with tightening those immigration routes a bit more?
Tightening the routes is perhaps not the words that I would use. I think there is definitely a case for aligning more in terms of salaries, and that's clearly something that government has taken on board. With effect from October, the minimum salary will raise from 20,800 to a proposed £25,447. That roughly aligns with the 2024 living wage. So something that I've been pressing for a long time is that we've been asking people to move here on salaries below a level on which they can live. And that those salaries across the board hadn't been raised since 2018. And that's a risk both to the migrants themselves and the living conditions, which, you know, we have very high living costs here, the way in which they're able to support themselves and their families, but also more broadly a risk of undercutting the local workforce because it's cheaper to employ somebody from overseas than it is from here. I think in terms of aligning more broadly, there's a lot that we need to do in terms of our processes. You know, I think there is a call that people want to feel more reassured about immigration control and who's on our island, and therefore more emphasis on collecting data so that immigration are aware what people are being paid, what they're, where they're living, whether or not they're physically on the island or not. And so joining the dots between the different bits of government who might have access as to who's attending a school, who's registered with a doctor, who's employed, those things I think are very important to give reassurance to the public that immigration control is operating properly. But there are things which the UK have which I just don't think are suitable for a small island environment and could perhaps be just a bit too bureaucratic or clunky and just not suitable for our needs, where we have a very different employment market and a very different government here. So there are certainly parts where we should align, but I think we should be brave enough to go our own way and to have locally designed solutions for some of the issues which we face.
Right. Now, I know earlier we were just speaking about the salaries. I know it's been a topic for the last couple of weeks on the ground and even here, I think, on our Man in Line. As an immigration lawyer yourself, you know, you're privy to the plight of the people that's coming over. You kind of understand what or how much they need, or you have an understanding of, you know, when they get here, this is how much they're going to earn, but these are their expenses. Having that rise, that salary rise, has it been an incentive, or has it? Is that something that's been welcomed?
I think certainly, you know, migrants are going to welcome a rise in that basic salary level. That's absolutely certain. The immigration rules which were drafted were revoked just shortly before Tynwald because there were some flaws in the way in which they were going to be brought into implemented in terms of the drafting. So it's certainly the right idea. Just operationally, it needed a few tweaks, and that was to make sure that people who were already here weren't disadvantaged, and that there weren't issues in terms of equality between Isle of Man workers and foreign national workers. So that's gone a little bit back to the drawing board to be looked at again, and I'm sure they'll come back with a much better set of rules which will take that into account. But yeah, I come across some very distressing circumstances where people are living in overcrowded accommodation, where people are struggling for basic necessities in terms of being able to afford food. One concrete example is that I was looking at a bank statement of a migrant who was earning just below £21,000, and his daily expenditure was a bus fare to work and a bus fare back, and there was about a 40 pence difference between those two bus fares. And when I asked him why that was, and he said, well, in the morning I have to get to work on time, he said, but in the evening, he said, I can get off 4 or 5 stops earlier, and that saves me 40 pence, and then I'll walk the rest of the way home. And I thought that was a terrible, terrible thing to be happening on our island, that a man couldn't afford a bus fare to and from work. And, you know, I'm very encouraged that the government are taking these steps and they're looking to raise these levels so that people can have a decent standard of living. But certainly it still falls well below the UK. And there is a conversation to be had with employers, because clearly this will impact them in terms of increased costs for them, and employers are having a difficult time. But it is something we need to look very carefully at, that people can support themselves and their dependents, and that overall they're net economic contributors to our economy. I have to say, in all my work, I've really only rarely met someone who moved to the Isle of Man because they wanted to claim benefits. That simply doesn't happen. People come because they want the opportunities the island offers, they want to work, and they should be given the opportunity to do that. But it should be at a decent salary wage level that allows them to live here properly and enjoy the things that the island has to offer, and not just survive in some very substandard accommodation, worrying about whether or not they can afford the bus fare home from work or not.
If I can move on to the NHS surcharge. Now, that's something that Tinwald also will be introducing. Is this something, I know the UK has it in place already, is this something that could possibly deter people from wanting to move over to the island? Because I know the Isle of Man government's, according to the island plan, they want to attract more people to raise the figure to 100,000 by, I think, year 2036 or something like, I can't remember exactly the year. But I know according to the island plan, you know, they're trying to attract people. But then with this introduction of the NHS charge, will it deter people from wanting to move over?
So I suppose first, possibly to take a step back and explain what the immigration health surcharge is. So it was introduced in 2014 in the UK, initially at a level of £200 per person per year of a visa. And it's a charge which only applies to foreign nationals. And I know that there is some confusion because obviously Treasury have just been consulting in terms of an overall NHS levy, but this is something very separate attached to an extra visa charge. Since it was introduced, the price has raised considerably. And so now for an adult, it's £1,035 per year, and then around £700 for a child or a student. And it applies for all visas, except those which are for visit visas and anything less than 6 months. So for a family applying from overseas who are paying their own visa costs, then it does increase the cost significantly because you pay upfront for the duration of your visa. It might have a negative effect on the number of immigration applications to the island, but generally, many employers pay those costs. And so it's just one of the additional costs which is involved with recruiting someone from outside the common travel area. So for most responsible employers, they tend to pay the visa application fees, and the immigration fees would fall within that. Employer costs generally on the island are much lower than the equivalent UK employer would pay, because the UK employer would be paying £600 for a sponsorship permission for the worker. They'd be paying somewhere about £400 for a small employer, or £1,000 per year for a larger employer for a sponsor licence. And then they would also have the immigration skills levy, which is about £1,000 per worker. So the UK costs would be considerably higher. So whilst costs would increase for Isle of Man employers, they are still below what the equivalent for the UK would be. There would still, I think, it's difficult to say. The UK has been constricting the range of visas which it would allow. So from this year, only those which are broadly managerial, university qualified degree levels are eligible, and the starting salary is around £40,000. There are some visas for different jobs below those skills levels, but again, there's changes which mean those people can't bring their dependents with them. So the Isle of Man, unless the government chooses to align to that full extent with the UK, would still remain to be an opportunity for people to move, offering, you know, good quality skilled jobs. And so it remains competitive against the UK. But yes, in short, the costs will go up, and that might deter some people.
I like that you spoke about the employers, because that's what's going to be my next question, because I know some of the companies, when they relocate you, they do tend to pay your fees. So I'm not sure if this is one for maybe the business sector, but if they do, you know, take on that fee, does it mean that over the next few months, you know, they kind of work it out with the employee, you know, to take out certain portions over the next few months just to cover that cost? Or does it mean that they will either offer a higher or lower salary just to kind of be in, just to cover that cost? I don't know if I'm making sense.
Yeah. So I suppose one point is that the company can't offer a higher or lower salary depending on the nationality or the whether or not someone's a migrant or not. It's very important that employers understand the rules are you can only bring in an overseas worker if there isn't a settled worker available. In terms of provisions that you're talking about where those costs are passed on to the employee, I think this is an area that the Isle of Man government, in bringing in the health charge, needs to address at the same time. The UK have strengthened significantly the rules about which costs can be passed on to the employee and which can't. And the Isle of Man needs to look at those rules carefully to make sure that we don't have exploitative situations where employees think that once they've moved to the island, they can't change employers, or those costs are passed unfairly. Often it's done on a sort of ratchet scale that if you leave the employer within a very short period, a proportion of those costs might be passed on to the employee. But I think that, you know, I've heard some very horrible situations where employees have been there for 5 years and they're being told they are not permitted to change employers, that they don't have that ability because they're on a visa, or if they do try and change employers, then even after 5 years, the cost of the initial visa would be passed on to them. So I think it's another area that government needs to explore and make sure they've got the right rules in place to protect people, but also to be fair to employers.
You mentioned exploitative. There was your LinkedIn post. Is it okay if I refer to it? From your LinkedIn post, you wrote, "Our immigration system is facilitating exploitation, black market working, and CTA risk, and you believe it needs to be fixed and fast." Can you elaborate a little bit more on that? Does that kind of flow in with everything that we've been speaking on?
It certainly does. And those are things that were covered in our report, which is part of the Inward Migration Report, which I'd encourage people to read. It's a long read, but it does look at all those aspects. So I think that I stand by those comments. I would say that the government is taking steps to address these. There has been certainly investment within the Immigration Office. And the immigration officers themselves are working flat out. They've got a really broad range of very difficult things that they're dealing with. And it wouldn't be through lack of hard work and determination on the part of the actual operational immigration officers on the front line. They are attempting to tackle these issues. But they don't always have the right tools in terms of the right legislative powers. For example, if currently an employer underpays a migrant and the migrant then goes to renew their visa and they show their payslips, the only sanction available for that underpayment is to cancel the migrant's visa. The immigration authorities don't have the ability to prevent that exploitative employer from rehiring another migrant in their place. And that's something which I would urge them to start fixing faster. We've moved really from a world in 2020 that had very low levels of immigration, you know, around 240 per year, to a situation where we've now got over 1,000 per year and in a much broader range of roles. And the compliance system around that has not really kept pace. And it hasn't kept pace with certain employers and individuals who've looked at the lack of compliance and perhaps the lack of joined up data and actively sought to exploit that for their own benefit and for their own greed. So I see many people who approach me in very difficult situations. And for most people, they'll have made a large investment to come here. They might have borrowed money to pay fees. They certainly have given up their previous employment, perhaps sold property or whatever, to be here to start their new life. And the risk to them is that if they have to go back, then all that investment is lost and they may well return in debt or in a worse position than they started. So for many people, the temptation is often, because they don't know what their rights might be, they don't know how to seek help for it, is to stay in some really difficult situations for the sake of their visa. And some employers know that and they exploit it. And that's something that I really would urge government that, you know, it started on that journey to start tackling those issues, but it needs to go further and at pace, because there are people on our island who are very much being treated as second-class citizens. And that's something I don't think any of us would want. We value the people who move here for the contribution they bring, both economically but socially and culturally. But at the moment, we've got a system where we're simply not keeping pace with the rate of change. It's not capable of exercising proper immigration controls, and that needs to be fixed.
So then, I think you've touched on this earlier and even now, but what reforms could government adopt to prevent these types of exploitation?
So I think there needs to be compliance and enforcement powers so they can tackle rogue employers. There needs to be joined up working between different departments, because then we will know who's actually living here, who's accessing which services. And that will allow government to plan better in terms of planning for education and schools. There is a question as to whether or not overall we've got the right balance in terms of our inward migration. I think in the last data set, they issued 191 visas to people earning below £25,000. It's not enough to live on, and those people certainly, particularly if they have dependents, wouldn't be net economic contributors. And therefore, we need to look at our workforce planning and say exactly which skills do we need people for, what salary should those people be earning, and where should we be bringing those people from. And I think we need to be giving better information to migrants before they arrive. It needs to be clearly explained that for many of the routes, it's temporary, and that if you don't comply with the conditions of your visa, whether that's to remain employed, to remain in a relationship, if those things end, and whether that's because you've been made redundant or you don't like the job and you want to move, or your relationship splits up, then your ability to remain within this jurisdiction also ends. So we need to be clearer about that, but also giving people more information about the fact that recruitment fees are illegal, about the fact that from day one they have employment rights and equality rights, and so that people are able to be access help and advice much easier than they can now, and without feeling that there would be a risk to their immigration status if they complain about the way that they're treated. Oh. I'd add on that really that, sorry to keep talking,
No, that's fine.
I would add on that really that in many cases, I found the Immigration Service to be very sympathetic, where they have found cases of proper exploitation. And they've, sadly, particularly in the last 2 years, they've encountered many, many of these cases, that they do try and treat people decently, give them time to try and find new employment to rectify their situation. And I think that for people who are listening out there who think that this might apply to them, then they should step forward. They should talk about the conditions that they're experiencing and seek help, because I think many people are just scared that if they raise it with the authorities, the only option will be you're going home. And people need to know that that's not always the case.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.